Para aquellos de ustedes que continúan,
nous espérons que vous avez passé un bon moment sur notre vol et espérons
vous revoir. For those of you continuing on, we wish you a safe and pleasant journey. If this is your final destination, we welcome you home.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast where we, Sandra Andres and Laura Bach, invite fellow artists, norm breakers, researchers, scientists, and spiritual leaders to share vulnerable stories and profound insights about how we all can feel more at home with ourselves.
Together with our guests, we will examine how to break the behavioral patterns that make us feel stuck and explore how to live a more joyful, connected, and sustainable life from the inside and out.
Because we do know one thing, maybe now more than ever. Regardless of our gender identity, profession, or nationality, we are more alike than we are different. And often it is a crisis or a challenge that cracks our hearts wide open and brings us closer to ourselves.
We are so excited to have you here with us. Welcome to Coming Home.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Coming Home podcast.
Welcome. This episode is something else, you guys and girls.
Absolutely. This is actually our very first podcast recording with a live audience that we recorded only a few weeks ago. And what an amazing experience that was.
It really was. I think something very special happens when people come together to expand their hearts and knowledge in the same room. You know, that curiosity that unites us all.
Yes, I have missed that so much. And what a perfect guest of expertise we had on to share her knowledge about toxic productivity and how to work smarter. The amazing brain scientist, Katarina Gospich. We will get back to her in a little bit. But first, we want to thank the people who made this episode possible.
A big thank you to Unity in Stockholm that hosted this live event. It is a very special place that is all about community and accommodating a flexible lifestyle where you can work and or stay in studio apartments for longer periods of time or only for a few days. They want each and every one of their guests to feel like it is their own home away from home. And with the gorgeous workspaces and facilities they have, this truly feels like a great and harmonious hub. We can say that because we actually stayed there around the days of making this episode. So thank you, Unity, for giving us the full Unity experience and for hosting this live event with us.
And thank you to our partner, Tweak Suites, for believing in the power of stories and finding a more sustainable way of living, and for supporting Coming Home before we even had our first episode. We just had this idea, and here we are. Lots of hard work, trial and errors, developing this through a pandemic, being isolated for long periods of time in our respective countries. We actually postponed the launch several times due to events that were completely out of our control. And we'll be honest with you, it was quite challenging.
It actually really was. Perfectly honest we are. And that is why it feels so fantastic that we got to sit and talk to Dr. Katarina Gospich and the audience to share some of that journey with them. And a lot of people said afterwards how much they recognized themselves in our stories, didn't they? So let's start by properly introducing Katarina.
Katarina Gospich is a brain scientist. She has an academic background as a physiologist, MD, and PhD. She has received awards such as the Mensa Prize and has been named both super talent and super communicator. Katarina has been an entrepreneur for over 10 years and works with the latest technology such as VR, AI, and data fusion in the areas of education and health. She has written no less than 8 popular science books and often appears as the brain expert in the media. Her latest book is called Digital Tsunami: The Revolution That Can Destroy or Save the World. In 2022, she starred as a boardroom advisor on The Apprentice Sweden.
So let's jump back to the 7th of April to our live event.
Welcome, Katarina.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you guys?
Oh, good. We're good. Now that we're here with you and all of you and everybody watching, what we're going to talk about today is what lies behind toxic productivity and burnout, stress, and what we all can do to work smarter and feel more at ease. And we will share some of our own stories, Sandra's and mine, and our joint story as well, which is some of the consequences of burnout. But first, we're wondering, do you practice what you preach, so to speak, or do you catch yourself, and taking time to reassess the way you work?
Yeah. So I would say I practice as I preach, and I think I was kind of born with the with all these questions in my head, kind of always asking how things are working. But then I'm human as everyone else. So I would say when I was younger, I had a very clear goal that I wanted to be a doctor. So for me, it was just a very clear goal. And I knew that I needed to work very, very hard. So then I was super ambitious. And I think if you would ask some of my old teachers, they probably thought it was a bit exaggerated. And sometimes they told me like, okay, calm down, it's just a test. But for me, it wasn't. It was like really the path to my goal. So I can agree with them from one point of view that, you know, it was maybe toxic productivity, but that was kind of necessary to reach that goal. But then when I was actually accepted into medical school, I just told myself that now I reached my goal. So now I don't need to, you know, continue chasing those grades or points or anything, because now I think my life will be okay. So, yeah, so it wasn't really a thing itself just to, how to say, work too much. It was more towards a goal. And I think sometimes in life, depending on our circumstances and where we come from, we actually need to put in that work, because otherwise we will not reach our goals.
Absolutely. That's so true. Yeah, well said. And we have been talking a bit about this, obviously, you and I, Laura, as we've been creating this new venture, new project. We've never done a podcast before. We really threw ourselves into this. We've been working nonstop, actually, since we had this idea. We were kind of obsessed. So we have been noticing a lot about this, like that we are running quite a bit and it's hard to stop. Because we're also passionate about it, but we just have to do a lot of different things ourselves.
And things we haven't done before.
And things we haven't done before. Yeah. And like I said, it's been extraordinary circumstances doing this during a pandemic, being in two different countries. But we will explain exactly what has been the thing for us that we have come back to over and over again, because that's also one of the things that we tend to move in circles as human beings, and we come back to the same place. And then we have a tendency to feel like a failure, but instead we should see how quickly we can bounce back from that, because now we're a little bit more aware, right? But still with this in mind, we have had some crashes. But first we want to take you back to some years back when I had a very pivotal insight in my own life. So let's please listen to that, our first story.
The room is sparsely decorated. Even saying that it is decorated is a stretch. Two chairs, a small IKEA table, the cheapest kind, with a single cup of water on it. Typically depressing, I think to myself. Why do rooms reserved for therapy need to look like this in Sweden? Just entering and taking in the room makes me want to cry and assume a fetal position. My eyes wander as my own hostile focus on the aesthetical mutiny against myself as a client is growing. Isn't it offensive when one should feel safe here? I personally would install better lighting, paint the room in colors that create some kind of harmony instead of... An attentive face in the chair across from me is looking back at me. I know this therapist by now. We have had a few sessions together, and I like her. I'm just not sure what my own problem is. Feelings of severe resistance and chaotic, contradictory thoughts have been haunting me for some time. I'm constantly angry and frustrated. Maybe it was me and not the other previous therapist that was wacko. My only other experience with a so-called therapist was with a woman who just wanted me to revisit the most painful memories and just stay there and cry and cry. The only thing that so-called therapist offered up as support was to go and hug one of the stuffed animals she had on a couch behind me. Hundreds of stuffed animals on a couch. Like a bad horror movie. I never hugged them. I just left and never came back. Wait, what was your question again? The friendly face, my current therapist, is kind enough to repeat herself. I said, what would happen if you took a break? No planning ahead, no nothing. What would happen if you stopped and didn't do anything? I let the words sink in. Now, being present, the words suddenly bubble up from inside of me. The insight is instantaneous, and I hear myself answer. I wouldn't exist.
Yeah, that was quite the thing, I realized. It was very instantaneous and shocking to me that I had this belief deep down. Because that's the thing, right? We walk around with these beliefs that we might have a hard time identifying or grasping. And so that was very important for me because as much as I love life and I'm very passionate and I'm very like driven by that, this is also another drive that I apparently had from my upbringing. And as I'm talking about in the first episode of Coming Home, that I was born with an impediment and I was praying to God to heal me and I didn't understand why that didn't happen. So of course my self-worth got a little wounded, so to speak. And but that drive then was really coming from the place that I think most of us come from, is that we want to be loved. So the fear of not being loved is great and has so many different expressions. So whereas I was jumping into doing and that made me feel like I was worthy in some way, some other people might just go passive, right? And I feel like my doings turned toxic. And here's where we would love your help in defining what is toxic productivity and burnout.
So, I mean, toxic productivity is kind of a word that has come, how to say, from society, something that we have come up with. Another word could maybe be like workaholic or something like that. When we talk about what type of personality you have, one of the criteria is, does it affect your everyday life? So do I work too much? If one would ask oneself that question, I would say, okay, but are your social relationships affected, your family relationships, like school or work or those types of things? Is it affecting these everyday things that you should be able to handle in life?
And at the time, the story that we heard, it was affecting my relationships. I was angry and frustrated all the time. And you're just like feeling like you're a different person, really. But this is the other aspect of it. And I know that you're really interested in this because you've studied fear, right?
I studied amygdala, which is the brain's fear structure. So amygdala participates in lots of things. For example, decision-making. And our decision-making is very much affected by our emotions. So in that sense, I studied how emotions affect our decision-making. And there we have amygdala, and of course, fear affects our decision-making.
Because that was my feeling, is that I was being angry. You're fearful, right? I was fearful at that point of like not being loved, or something was agitating me all the time. How can we help ourselves from there?
Yeah. I think it's good to just understand where our, how to say, thoughts, feelings, behaviors come from. Because if you start putting words on it, and as you did, it becomes easier and like, you know, where does this come from? Why am I working like this? So I think a common mistake that we do sometimes is that we think that everyone works in the same way. So if I work like this, I think that you work like this. And I usually have an algorithm with food. So let's say I like chocolate, but I don't like cheese, and you like cheese, but you don't like chocolate. And then it's your birthday, and I'm like, oh, I love chocolate, so I will give you lots of chocolate.
I'm like, where's the cheese?
Yes. And you will be very angry, and it's like, oh, I don't like chocolate. And I will be like, what? And when it comes to food, it can be quite obvious, right? It's not so difficult to understand that we can like different things. But for some reason, when it comes to our emotions and the way we work and think and all of that, we suddenly think that everyone should be quite similar, but we are not. And that also means that if there is a trigger or something that stresses you, that's something that you might have learned from your childhood. So then that will activate your amygdala, the brain's emotional structure, and you feel fear or anxiety, whereas I'm sitting here and I don't understand anything, you know. So I always think it's also good when you try to understand other people to think these types of thoughts and also ask these questions and have these types of discussions. I think the reason why we are getting further and further away from that is that in order for people to connect and reach deep conversations, we actually need to meet, and we need to take time for the conversation. Because if we would sit here for, you know, 5 hours, for example, we would really tune in, but we also learn to listen. And we will also learn that, okay, some parts are more exciting and fun than others. Just by seeing other people and listening, that's when we create these connections. And then we can also go deeper and deeper in terms of getting to know each other. Whereas when we are digital all the time, we tend to just have more shallow conversations. And especially when we have our phones on the table. Because the way we work is that the brain actually assigns some brain power without us thinking about it to the phone. And then we kind of stay up here and do not really, really listen. And the reason is because we want to be able to switch. So we can also, you know, just take a text message or, you know, a call, and then we go back and forth. So then we just stay here rather than...
So just having it in front of you on the table actually... makes you have a less deeper conversation with the person just because your brain is like, oh, I know it's there.
Yeah.
And I need to be able to quickly pick it up and do what I need. So if you put it away, we know now scientifically that that's going to deepen a conversation.
Yes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's do this from now on.
And also, actually, if you're going to perform on a test, it's the same thing. So just by having your phone close to you, you will, you know, think about is Sandra texting me or something.
Honestly, in the beginning, when we started,
when we started using cell phones, I don't know
what in the beginning when people started, like, it really annoyed me that when people put them on the table.
Yeah.
And then I noticed how I just switched myself, that I do it now.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking about that. I will definitely stop.
Yeah.
That's so terrible.
It is. And it's really a great distractor. And we don't think about it, how much brain power we actually allocate to it, just to be ready, you know, if we get the message or something.
And that brings us to what we've been talking about too, is attention.
Yeah.
And I was hearing such an interesting thing on Brené Brown's podcast. There is a neuroscientist, Amishi Jha, who has studied specifically attention. And she was saying, we only have one torchlight.
Yeah.
And just like they reacted, the ones in the podcast, I reacted the same way. I was like, no, I need five, right? Can you explain that a bit more? How to work with your attention to improve it, I guess.
So it's actually super simple. It's all about doing one thing at a time.
Oh. No, it's not simple.
And I usually have an algorithm around that, and that's... when we walk. So if we walk, it's a very effective way of, you know, moving from A to B. But imagine that you would put your feet together and then jump from side to side, you know. That would be quite hard, right? Mm-hmm. And imagine that you had to jump, you know, two steps to the side and then back, you know, or three and then back. That would be quite exhausting. And then you're going to go to work, you know.
Exhausted.
Yeah. And you will be super tired once you get there. And it's the same thing with the brain. So if we have two things that we are doing, the brain is kind of jumping back and forth. So when you're focusing on A, you are on that spot. And then when you're going to focus on B, you have to jump to B. Mm-hmm. And then you have left A. And if you have three things, you need to jump, you know, from A to B to C. And there are studies, different ones, of course, but showing that we can have like 20, 30 tabs up on the computer when we are working. So that means that you need to jump from A to B to C to D to E to, you know, the whole alphabet and even more. And then you need to jump back when you're going back to the first task. So then you can just imagine how difficult it is for your brain to do all of those jumps and how exhausting it is for the brain to be able to
look at me.
Because we both have like 45 tabs open. Yeah. So I'm thinking how, like, question, then what? Like, okay, I close all my tabs. I have one tab open.
Yeah.
And then I finish the task.
Yes. And you move to the next.
How many people in here have more than, let's say, five tabs open at the same time? So everyone is raising their hands, and I'm sure you're raising your hands out there as well. So this is a big one, because it's an interesting, you know, speaking of attention, that our brains are not built for that, full stop. And we can do it all we want, but it's just going to fill our inadequacy up, 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 until we get this, what you're saying.
Yeah.
So we need to get it now.
Yes. And that's really a way, a very concrete way to work smarter. And it's kind of in general as well for distractors. So if you imagine that you have like 100% brain power, and then you have these different distractors around you, maybe some people are talking over there and you have a ringing phone and maybe there is a radio show on or a great podcast. If you just imagine that you, you know, allocate 10% to each of these distractors, so if you have three, you will allocate like 30%. I'm just making these figures up. But then you will just have 70% left for the task that you're actually performing. Mm-hmm. So then it also becomes very obvious. Okay, if you have 100% or 70% of your brain capacity allocated to a task, when do you think you will perform at your best?
Okay.
Yeah.
Got you.
Gotcha. Got noted.
Noted.
But I can also add, it is very difficult and it's kind of a bit unfair, because if we're going back to the savannah when we were cavemen, it was all about, you know, we were walking around, and then if we heard something, you know, from the bushes, we allocated the attention there, and then there were kind of one thing. I imagine that there were not like 100 snakes coming out at the same time, you know, you kind of heard it from one spot. So today, everything is really picking on our attention, as if there was like 100 different snakes from 100 different bushes. Again, it's not so strange that we get very exhausted. From that.
No, that is not strange. We don't have to feel inadequate for it, maybe.
True.
But this thing about, like, what we were talking about before, about the being aware of your personal pattern, how you react, what you get triggered by, because for me, that was a big one. After discovering this that we heard about, I was working a lot on like healing myself and that part of me. But then I do realize that I also have an autopilot, which is, as soon as you get stressed, your autopilot switches on. So for me, it's been the way that I work is very much that I'm not reading the signs from my own body, really, until I'm like, I'm happy. It's exciting. I'm, you know, it's creative, fun. And then,
yes. What I would say is that when we are younger, we learn if we can feel safe or not. So when you get a trigger that everyone would react to, you learn how to handle that signal. So if you are in an environment where you can't really feel safe with those signals, maybe a survival strategy becomes to ignore them, because otherwise it would stress you too much. And you haven't gotten any tools what to do with all of that. And then it, of course, becomes super uncomfortable. So it's not strange at all that we turn those signals off. We also know that when we put labels on our emotions and we kind of have this inner conversation, that's actually a way to calm the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system. Once you start communicating with yourself and understanding these signals, then that could be the process of healing.
Yeah. Yes. I think what you're saying there is the core of the issue, to understand that we need to be aware of why we are behaving in a way that we know is not good for us.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my story.
Yes.
Because, yells. talking about looping.
This is it.
That's no problem, I'll be there ASAP, I hear myself say. And I almost don't notice anymore how that makes my heart beat faster or how it makes my stomach tighten. My body knows, and it has for a long while, that it's all just become too much. But something in me keeps going, desperately afraid of the consequences if I don't. What will the people that count on me do if I say no? If I don't show up when they need me, if I just stop. So I get on my bike and I start the journey across Copenhagen to get to the acting job that I had just been called in for last minute. And then it happens. Everything around me disappears. And when I come back to my senses, I realize that I didn't fall. I didn't even blink. I'm still biking. But I have no idea where I am or where I'm heading. I have simply just blacked out for God knows how long whilst biking along in the middle of a street with cars all around me. I shakingly stop, get off my bike and sit down on the ground. And the what if of what just happened hits me like a ton of bricks. And they all have one word written on them. Enough.
Yes.
100% relate.
Yes. And what's really scary about this is, I mean, this could have potentially harmed me. And that was so scary. And it took me a while to, like, where am I going? What's happening? And I was even younger than I am now. So, you know, it was just so clear that I had no excuse for not stopping. Mm-hmm. And I continued. Mm-hmm. I didn't stop. And that makes me think, and this is, I think, I'm sure many can relate. The fear, what I was describing of letting people down, the inadequacy that it would awaken in me if I stopped, and feeling like I wasn't a part of what was happening because the world moves in such a pace, so if I don't, then I can't keep up. Mm. All this is so great that it's actually greater than the fear of losing my life.
Yeah.
Like, to put it on a point, that's really what it is. And it seems like this dysfunctional autopilot. So it's always a feeling of running behind yourself. Mm. And that will get you in the situation that I just described in my story. I even heard people that just go paralyzed. They can't get out of the bed in the morning. And it's stress. That's what it does to the body. Mm. So talking about that, the reason why we don't stop when we know we need to. Mm. Why is that so strong within us?
Yeah. The reason why we continue is because that's a safe place. That's something that we have always done when we have felt like this. And I think this is what's really interesting with human beings and how we work, and also the physiology, how the body and the brain communicates and what happens and such, because the signals are, of course, there to warn us, but it's like we have forgotten a bit how to be human and also just accepting everything around us. There is an expression saying that we become the medium that we consume. So now when we are digital, everything is going so fast, and usually people are just happy on Instagram or Facebook, and we don't see this, average life. Or sometimes you can see someone crying, or, you know, I'm without makeup, but still I look super good, you know?
There's a filter on.
So you don't really see all of these, raw feelings that is part of our life.
Messy.
Yeah, and I think, again, we need to go back to that and go back to the campfire and just gather. And, you know, sometimes it's okay to be a bit bored and to just sit and to just listen. And sometimes we feel happy, or sometimes we don't feel that much. But everything should be so maximized today, and we should hack everything, especially after these 2 years. I think we would all be very good off if we just pulled the plug a bit and just disconnected and just put things away a bit. We also need to be right here, right now, because usually anxiety comes from something that has happened or something that we think gonna happen. Whereas if we just look at now, it's like, okay, it's pretty good, you know? I'm sitting right here, right now. We would be very helped by just going back to basic.
But it's so interesting how sometimes when I meditate, yes, I do meditate sometimes, but I don't as much as I should. There. I sit and I just allow that feeling of being incredibly uncomfortable. Like, what if I just stay here and just relax? And I know I've got, you know, I can hear my dog and I know my kid and my and the phone's ringing. And Sandra's like, couldn't we have a meeting? And I'm like, I just can't. I'll just breathe and stay here. And I feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And trying to just stay with being uncomfortable, I think, is something we've completely forgotten. Is such a big part of life. Because there, I feel something happens in, it's like a child. If a child is crying, you wouldn't say, like, come on, be happy, you know, let's just quickly fix it. It's like you pick them up and you hug them and you're like, it's okay. It's okay to be sad, you know.
Yeah.
And then we stop doing that with ourselves. At one point, it's just not okay anymore.
Yeah.
Like, get over it. Get on.
Yeah.
And I feel just allowing that space, really, to be sad and not necessarily understanding why, but just being, this feels this way, and it's very uncomfortable, but it won't stay this way forever, because that's what I've thought sometimes. Like, it will stay this if I allow it.
Exactly. And then who knows how big it's going to be. I think that's also a lot of people's fear, that it will be out of control once I let this open this little lid on the box. But the fact of the matter is that we so quickly go through emotions, right? That's also a thing that comforts me.
And I also think what you said in terms of thinking the thought, it won't stay like this forever, is also a very comforting thought, especially when life feels tough. Yeah, people have probably read, you know, these amazing stories like, oh, I went through this and I survived. And I think it's good to think about those stories when you have a bad moment yourself, that nothing lasts forever. Everything will pass, you know. But I also think it's interesting, because what you are describing is what I refer to, that you become the medium that you consume. So the reason why we want to hurry everything is because that's how it is in the digital world. Whereas when we were cavemen, I imagine, at least, that they were not like, come on, you need to be happy now, you know.
You need to post within an hour.
So things could take more time, right? That's what I mean. Sometimes it's good to actually turn things off, so we will actually let other things in life take time, because that's what I think we are really missing. We don't let things take time.
No. so impatient.
Yeah.
Always, yeah. Now, I had to work a lot with myself because I was so good at suppressing, and I still am when my autopilot switches on. But it's interesting with this thing that I never used to cry. I was like pushing everything down and then practicing and practicing. It took years. But then now I cry all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, like it's so nice. It's just the freeing of energy. Yeah. It's just energy.
Yeah.
Or angry when you become angry. So that's really, there's really freedom there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I mean, yeah.
And I think it's cool actually with crying, because a couple of years ago I read that when you cry, morphine-like substances are released. So we call them opioids. Mm-hmm. So once I read that, I was like, okay,
let's
cry.
Yeah. But that's so good, because then I understand why I cry when I see a beautiful flower these days. Because I do. I'm like, I feel like a 90-year-old grandma.
Yeah. It's so beautiful.
but you know, like, I like it.
Yeah. But it also gives you the release of these endogenous, opioids or morphine-like substances. So
that's good to know.
Yeah, why not trigger that?
Yeah, you know? Just cry more. And cry together is nice too, I think. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. You do that also. Which brings us to our joint story.
Let's listen to that one, please.
Laura's tired face appears on my computer screen and smiles back at me. I raise my coffee cup in a salute and say, "Good morning, lovely. How are you? How did it go?" Laura gets straight to the point and conveys the doctor's orders from her visit to the clinic the day before.
"I apparently need to think of this as a severe concussion, so no screens, TV, or too much stimuli, and I need to rest more."
She is stating the facts pragmatically, but I hear that trembling in her voice as she continues.
"It will get better," they said. "I just need to give it time."
It's been 7 months now since Laura ended up at the hospital with COVID. And since then, the long-haul symptoms have been piling up. Amongst them, some disturbing cognitive malfunctions that reduce her ability to work.
"Sandra has already been taking on a lot of the workload of our passion project, our visionary joint venture that we're calling Coming Home. And the situation is getting critical now."
Laura knows this. She was supposed to be better by now, not worse. And I see her pain. "It's okay," I say. "I got you." That's when Laura can't hold back the tears anymore. They stream down her face while words like, "I'm sorry, I just don't know what to do," and "Where do we go from here?" fall out of her in random order.
We talk and try to make a plan of how I can work as little as possible, and then we hang up. Later that same evening, I see that Sandra has left a voice message. It's normal, we leave several messages a day for each other, but the length of the message is not. It's 5 minutes long. I sit down on my couch and press play. It takes me a few seconds to understand what's going on. The desperation in Sandra's voice is palpable. She's having a panic attack. The months of running at the pace of two people has finally caught up with her. Her system has put down a roadblock. She can't do this anymore. She simply can't go on working like this.
"I'm sorry. I'm just so tired and I can't think straight. I just needed to share this. Can we talk tomorrow, please?" Only minutes after I hang up, Laura sends back a message saying, "Of course, and we will get through this."
We speak again the next day, for a long while. There is no magic button. We know this. Pulling the plug completely on Coming Home would be a solution, but that's just not an option, we both agree. "We have to practice what we preach," Sandra says, and the truth of the matter hits us both.
We can't make a podcast about how people stay true and come home to themselves every day, only to turn around and do the complete opposite ourselves. Something's gotta give. To explore ways to live more slowly and sustainably is why we started Coming Home in the first place. And so it is. We don't know how to move on from here, but we take a deep breath together. The journey of restructuring the way we work begins. Again.
Yeah, you want to push that magic button.
Oh, for sure.
Reset. Mm-hmm. What we discovered here during this work that we've done is that there were some extraordinary circumstances, obviously. That was very hard to take in because we were so wanting to just run with this. It's so fun and we're very passionate about it. And then our autopilots, both of our autopilots just kicked in, right? When you have a goal, it's very hard to be like, I'm just going to wait a bit. Mm. It's just not possible in some cases. Yeah. But there is something called structure. That, you know, because Laura and I both, we have this in common, perfect combination of like just, we are just used to working as much as possible with the things we love, right? And then you take a break for a bit. Mm. But when that is not given to you, you have to give it yourself.
Yeah.
So this is, we want to talk about structure with you.
Yes.
Please. No, because it's really a learning process here for us. And we're going to be very open about this in the podcast, because I think these are the kind of conversations we need to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where do we sort of stumble, mm-hmm. even though we know all that we know, right?
Yeah. And I can just add to that question about structure is long haul COVID, apparently, is like one of the things that I suffer from is like a severe concussion. Mm-hmm. And they don't know why this is, but that's just fucking COVID. Mm-hmm. So that's really done its bit with me. And the realization and understanding that I need to take breaks, mm-hmm. because otherwise I literally just get sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm working. I'm like, no brain. And it just goes like, nope. And then I can talk to Sandra and I just go blank. And she's like, what? And I said, what? What? It's so weird. It's so weird what it does to your brain. But it, and again, they don't know exactly what's happening. So structuring in those breaks, trying to start a company, basically, whilst also working as an actress, while also being a mum, and whilst also, and so on. So what we want to get into now is very much hands-on advice, because there must be people, COVID or not, that feel that same going into patterns that are not like structural working patterns that aren't beneficial, but we don't have a system that works like you're describing with not only having one tab open, for example.
Yeah. So I would say that the first thing that I would do is just to, how to say, look at your life and ask what's the most important things. Trying to remove things and also ask what is it that you want rather than what is it that society wants or someone else expecting from you. Yeah. Who said that you need to be perfect? Why do you need to, how to say, do yoga X amounts of times or, you know, meditation, whatever, even though it's good for you. Mm. But if it becomes a stress and just a requirement and you are not really mindful, even though you're like, okay, I'm doing my breathing exercises, maybe it's just better to go out to play with your kids, to really be there, and then you're more mindful, or, you know, you get to play, you get to be outside. There was a study, it's quite old now, but they asked people who were about to die, what do you regret the most? And one thing they said was that I didn't live the life that I wanted to live. I lived the life that was expected from me. Mm. So I think that could be a key question in order to maybe sort some things out and remove some things, and then make a little maybe schedule if you're helped by that. For example, for how long can you focus? And if it's, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, that's great, because there are also studies coming now, and they are quite crazy, that shows that no matter if you look at workers or college students, their attention is just a few seconds to a few minutes. So that's the actual focus that we have today, depending on what task you're looking at. So if, let's say, your focus time could be 30 minutes, you're actually winning over everyone.
Wow.
So, you know, you could
good on
pep
you.
Yeah, yourself. Yes, no. And I think also in terms of finding your way and you finding your way, we need to be nice to ourselves, because we will do things wrong and, you know, commit mistakes, and that's fine. And I like to think of this quote from Batman, where they say that you fall so you can rise again.
Oh, yes, definitely.
That's a good one.
You know, and you can fall and rise many, many, many times.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, but that's the thing then. So, yeah, exactly. How quickly you get up again is kind of a testament too to how I think just accepting that, then you start to feel better.
And that's how we all learn to walk, right?
Yeah.
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 One thing is what comes from within, right? But we also have a like a societal conversation where we have somehow decided along the way what is failing and what is weak, and that that is a negative thing. And also it's, it seems like that the more balls you can have in the air at the same time and then catch them all, the greater success you are, the more cool and like together you have it. And then we all know that you all drop the balls, right? Yeah. And we all drop them.
I never do. But I never do.
Not from Sandra. But that we don't talk about dropping balls.
Yeah.
So which is interesting, because if we could change the narrative to that being the healthy bit.
Yeah.
The healthy bit is when you drop the balls.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to have them all in the air. You have one flashlight. You know, pick which one you want to follow and then catch that one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think you're really onto something, just in general, that choose your narrative. And I mean, you are storytellers.
Exactly, exactly.
So in the same sense that you're telling a story here, I also think that one can think of, you know, our own lives. What story do you want to tell? And I also think that the only way, how to say, to change this societal conversation is by us changing the narrative and saying the things that you are doing. And usually what happens when you do that is that people are like, yeah, I agree, and then you start changing something.
Yeah, that's why we want to do this podcast. That's why we want to have these conversations.
Yeah.
And that's why we are like willing to share all our fabulous messiness is because we connect that way, and we connect, as you said before, we can connect up here the digitalized way, or we can connect deeper down. By sharing from that place of vulnerability, saying, I don't know what I'm doing half the time. Can we all please relate to that? Yes, we can, and that's okay. So we make that our narrative for ourselves, but then we also allow the other people to make that narrative okay for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we're going to move forward to a more sustainable way of being in ourselves, but also being with each other and therefore in the world.
For sure.
You know. Mm.
And what I've also noticed among lots of people, and actually when it comes to podcasts, is that some have said that, oh, I'm so tired hearing, I'd say, all of these success stories, because people just talk about, and then I made all of these millions, blah, blah, blah. Whereas we all know that, okay, probably it didn't fall from the sky. And I think that has been very nice just during this podcast to talk about, okay, this is a process, why we're sitting here and
To share our process with each other, so that we bring that vulnerability into our workspaces. It's so important. And then I think we just need to add some like fun exercises in all the workplaces. I think that's more common now, but I was thinking about a very like good thing that I try to keep in mind is just how you can change your attention and everything, just the way you view something, by changing your physiology. Like just jumping up and down, like you said, go out and play, just go for a walk. Totally know this. Do not honor it, you know, on a daily basis. Oh, it's because you get into something. And that's where you just need to have your little alarm on, with your cell phone over here. Right?
In the next room.
And just be like, no, I'm getting up. I'm getting up. I'm jumping up and down, whatever it is. But I have underestimated that before. And I see how important that is. What makes you create new patterns for yourself that are fun, too? Like, what do you like to do, right? Exactly. Asking yourself the right questions when it comes to that, too. And talking about questions, we want to open up for any questions that you may have for Katarina. So please hit us. Do we have any?
I was wondering, when you said that when the phone is on the table, your brain is like paying attention. So if it's in the, like when you're working, if it's like put away and you can't see it, is that enough? Or I've heard that maybe it needs to be in another room.
In another room is much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I would say as long as it's very close to you, you kind of have these thoughts like, okay, you know, did I get this text message? And it's also very easy to just, you know, take it out from your bag or your pocket. Mm. Whereas if you really need to walk a bit, you're like, ah, you know, and that's actually how you take the tip of an urge. Mm. So when you have an urge, it's the same thing with food. If you have a big bowl of candy in front of you, it has also been shown that if you have like candy and carrots or something similar, and someone tells you, you can just eat from the carrot bowl, then people tend to sit and just look at the candy. So if they're going to perform a task, they will actually perform worse because they are not allowed to take candy. Whereas if you are allowed to take candy, you feel like, okay, I don't need to think about it. You know, I don't need to inhibit my impulse. Mm. So it's the same thing with the phone then. So just move it far away.
Yeah. And even if you don't have notifications on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We tend to think of it as long as it's in our space. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Mm. Yes, please.
On that theme, does that mean when you have that next to you when you sleep, that really disturbs your sleep as well? Or
so I wouldn't say once you are asleep, you are obviously sleeping, so then it can be more signals. But otherwise, it's known that if you use a screen before bedtime, it tends to stimulate you, and it's lots of blue light, so it actually tells the brain to stay awake. So that's why it's good to remove the screen like 1-2 hours before you go to bed. There are even these funky glasses that, you know, have yellow glasses inside them that are blocking the blue light. And sometimes I don't think we understand what the manipulative tool it actually is. And the business model is that you pay with your attention.
And attention is our greatest resource. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then that has the power over us and not the other way around. So we, again, need to change that narrative.
Yes.
Take the power back.
Yeah, which is kind of taking your torch back a bit.
Yes,
yeah,
true.
You're taking that one beautiful torch back.
Question down there. I saw a hand raised.
Yeah, on the theme with children, I have 1-year-old child at home. Will he find it harder in the future growing up within the digital world to be presence and be connected with who he is, like growing up with the digital world? And what can I do as a mom to try to help him?
Good question. Good
question. It's a really good question. So what's actually happening in my life right now is that I have a lot of conversations with people working within HR or someone who's a CEO or something, and saying that I have lots of young people who are my employees, and they don't really know how to handle themselves. So actually, even today, I had this conversation with this lady. She had worked in HR forever. And she said that if they encounter a problem, they don't know how to solve it. So they start asking Google. And they Google things.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So her experience that she shared with me today was that she felt they didn't have any creativity to come up with solutions to these problems. And she also said that she had encountered problems where the younger people did not want to talk. So in a company where there were different generations, like elderly people and younger, the elderly just tended to ring, you know, whereas young people are more afraid of talking. And there is even research on this showing that younger people like to text and communicate through text, because through text you can be perfect and you can edit what you're saying. Whereas when we talk like this, we are not perfect and we might say things wrong or such. And I find it just very interesting hearing all of these stories, because they're becoming more and more present, I think. What I can see is that this is something we should address. And I actually see the need for people to start communicating like cavemen and cavewomen, as we once used to do. And in terms of being a parent, I guess it's easier said than done. But I truly believe, so far as we are humans, that we need to go back to be more human and put these things away. And when it comes to how much, how to say, digital screens kids should use, it's actually the less the better. Because especially when you are very young, it's important to have this type of connection, to see someone's face, to see the facial expressions, to hear how you talk and what's called the prosody, how you kind of sing the language, and that you read together, and all of those things. And what can happen when you introduce a screen is that it's actually at the cost of these other things. So that's the actual danger when you remove these human things that kids need. In research, you talk about for how long, like duration, do you expose your kid to a screen? Frequency, how often? Is the kid alone when they are doing this? And then it said that you should watch screens together with your kid, because again, then you can have the communication and be human. And then it's talked about the content. So there are, of course, great content, but then if they just, you know, sit and do, I don't know, whatever, it just takes their time, and they need this type of excitement. And when they don't get it, they might have a problem, you know. And it's also important to remember that our brains are not fully developed until we're 25 years old. So that's when the frontal lobe, which is the smartest part of the brain that can actually inhibit our impulses, that's when it's fully developed. So, yeah, if you're 1 year old, you don't stand a chance, you know. And that's actually for a very long time. So sometimes parents or people say bad things about kids that they are just consuming. But it's actually the parents and the adults' responsibility, you know, for the kids to create a good narrative. And then also, I mean, people come from different backgrounds, and some people have great privileges and others don't. So, I mean, if you are a parent who needs to work a lot, I mean, who am I to tell what they can do or not? Like,
no, but it's nice to know. Yeah. It's nice to have the knowledge. Right? Yeah. That this is actually how you can help. And then you do it and to the extent that you can.
Yeah.
And then the being kind to yourself kicks in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes people also just need to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't use the excuse anymore than that my frontal lobe, was that it?
Yeah.
Isn't fully developed.
Because it is. Or it's going backwards.
Yeah. We'll use that excuse now.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your questions.
Thank you for being here.
Yes.
Thank you for watching at home.
Yeah. And can we just conclude this with that fact that we all need to find what our campfire is?
Yeah.
You know, how do we set that up in our homes, even in our workspaces maybe?
Yeah.
Like, this is the time for the campfire.
Yeah.
Let coming home be a campfire as well.
Absolutely.
We are so grateful that you took the time. So,
yeah. And thank you, Katerina, for coming.
Yeah. Thank you.
I am officially in awe of this woman. The way she makes brain science so accessible for everyone and explains it so eloquently, how we can implement the research in our everyday lives, is just so incredibly useful and refreshing.
Isn't it? I mean, I feel so fortunate to be doing this, Andra.
Yeah.
What a joy it was recording with a live audience. That will certainly not be the last time we do that.
Oh, for sure not. And let's encourage each other to put our phones in the other room once in a while and maybe close a couple of tabs or all of them now and again. Right?
Let's do that. And thank you again to the lovely Unity for hosting us and this event, and the incredible people at Haas Agency that helped facilitate the making of this live episode.
The editing and sound mixing of this episode is made by Rahmatullah Sheikh. Our theme music is made by Caroline Jungstrom, and our website is designed by Seth and Osten Communication Bureau.
Thank you for listening to Coming Home with me, Laura Buck.
And me, Sandra Andres.
Take care, and remember, be kind to yourselves till next time.